Wednesday afternoon, time for our bi-monthly conversation with MIBiz senior writer Mark Sanchez. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Good afternoon.
Well, there is a lot going on. A lot of this has to do with government in many ways. We'll start out with Grand Rapids, Betsy DeVos taking the post as U.S. Education Secretary. And then the dilemma, right? She comes from a family, a philanthropic family, a family with a number of businesses around the world. How does she separate herself here from her political side, working for the federal government, and then the businesses on the other side?
Very carefully, as we wrote about in my biz this week, we kind of took a look at this 108-page filing with the U.S. Government Ethics Office back a number of weeks ago that everybody has to file if you're taking a cabinet post for disclosure to avoid conflicts of interest. And the question is simple. How does her role as education secretary affect the family's business holdings and investments? You know, everybody knows the DeVos family has vast business investments in Grand Rapids, very philanthropic. You look around downtown, you can see that very clearly. So we decided to have a conversation with some folks. We talked to Greg McNeely, who's with the family office, the Winquest Group. Bottom line, how will her role in the cabinet affect things? He said there won't be a substantial impact in how the family or Winquest engages in West Michigan, although there will be some changes. Number one, the family cannot invest in anything education-related for obvious reasons. She has resigned from a number of organizations, both family-owned businesses, plus a number of not-for-profit organizations that are some involved, some not involved in education. Some are think tanks, some are advocacy groups in education. She's backed away from those. And when the family office, the Winquest Group, looks to make investments, it needs to do a little bit of extra due diligence, make sure this organization it's investing in, whether a straight-up investment in a company or investing in a private equity or venture fund, to make sure there's no involvement that would conflict with her role as education secretary. So it's interesting. It was an interesting case to look at and how things change. Bottom line, not a lot of change, but there are some things that they have to be a little careful about to avoid those conflicts.
What did you learn about the process here?
That it is a steep, heavily involved process for folks who want to take on these public roles. It's, you know, I would invite people. We have a link to this document at the MIBiz website. Take a look at it. It really takes a deep look at all of the family's business holdings and lays them out there. And, you know, this is a family, despite their public position, they take some pride and covet their privacy and their business holdings. So this is a different situation. It's put the spotlight on the family business.
Who did you interview for this story?
We spoke with a number of people, both publicly and on background. Obviously, Greg McNeely, he's the chief operating officer at the Winquest Group, that was spoke quite a bit. He says he gets these questions all the time since she was first nominated and her name came up. He's been getting these questions constantly from people around town. How's this going to affect business? We spoke to some folks on background just to get a little understanding, because a lot of the investments where she's divested or is divesting, they're private equity and venture funds. So how does that work? As a limited partner, she's not making decisions or involved in decisions on where a venture capital fund, where she has a holding, invests. But because of that potential for that fund to invest in something education related, she's got to back away. So how does that work as a limited partner when you back away from a venture fund? You know, your investment agreement says you're going to stay with it until the fund closes, but now you're backing away. So we had to learn a little bit about that and how you separate your position in that. So we talked to some folks about that. We talked to, again, Greg. We talked to a few other folks that could just kind of offer a perspective on how these things work and what difference it's going to make.
I'd mentioned in the opening that we have a bit of a political and federal government theme here this week. GOP repealing and replacing Obamacare, or at least we're seeing the outline or the beginnings of a new health care bill. Blue Cross Blue Shield proposing lower rates for small businesses. How does this all work together?
I'm not sure it does. Obviously, every health insurer is operating under the guidelines and the rules of the present law, the Affordable Care Act. You know, whether Congress acts on what was unveiled this week and that passes or goes back for, you know, some changes, we'll see. But under the present rules of the ACA, every carrier must accept anybody who wants coverage. Remember back the debate years ago in Michigan in the small group market, and these are employers with 50 or less employees, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan was losing a lot of money on that market. Why? Because it was the insurer of last resort. It was the only health insurer in Michigan that had to take everybody who applied, regardless of their health status. That left Blue Cross Blue Shield with what's known as adverse selection. Other insurance carriers could cherry pick the people, the best customers, the people who cost the least to insure. Blue Cross Blue Shield was stuck with the folks who, if stuck is a proper word, who were the most costly to insure. That changed under the ACA. So that is, in the words of Blue Cross, even the playing field. They have an even playing field now. And that risk of that high-cost population is spread out over more parties. What has that done? Well, that's helped out the finances for Blue Cross Blue Shield and its HMO subsidiary, Blue Care Network, in the small group market. As a result, we've seen rate moderation and stabilization the last few years. And if you're a Blue Cross Blue Shield customer, you're a small business, here's what to expect. If you renew your policy in the third quarter or fourth quarter, you can expect a statewide average of a 1.3% reduction in your rate for a PPO policy and 3.2% reduction for an HMO policy. That's for third quarter and fourth quarter renewal. So there's one thing the ACA has done is bring about that stabilization, and you have the largest health insurer in Michigan by far that's able to start offering a lot better rates to its small group businesses.
Telemed services have really become more popular in the state. That's where you essentially can call your doctor or have some kind of a Skype or FaceTime, and they can come up with a diagnosis that way, saving people a trip and cutting down on costs in the doctor's office, right? This is really beginning to take off.
This is taking off, especially with this younger generation that grew up with technology and has never known a time without high connectivity. How many of us as parents have ever gotten up on a Saturday morning and the kid's got an earache or something going on? You should probably see a doctor. You know you're not supposed to take him to the ER. You don't want to make that trip to the urgent care center because that can has its issues as well. Well, here with these services, there's Spectrum Health MedNow, and you also have a new one here in Grand Rapids called Answer Health On Demand. Blue Cross Blue Shield also has a service. It offers a telemed service. You can go on. You can schedule an appointment with a doctor, and through your smartphone, your laptop, your device, your tablet, you can do kind of a video conferencing with a doctor. And this is really for minor conditions, aches, pains, rashes, fevers. And if the doc sees this is something that they can diagnose and maybe order that prescription, send it to the pharmacy, you're good. If the doctor thinks you need to see somebody at a little higher level, then they can refer you somewhere. So this is really taking off. We're seeing more doctors sign on to this. We're seeing the insurers reimburse for it. I think Answer Health, it's $45, or MedNow is $45 or so for a virtual visit. That compares probably is a fraction of the cost of going to an ER when you got a minor medical condition. And all the data out there says consumers are adopting to this. They are using it, they're adapting it, and some of the big platforms that are that operate nationally, they're seeing some big increases in the number of users each year.
Who is taking that call? Is it truly a doctor? Is it a nurse? Are doctors on a rotation? How does it work behind the scenes?
Doctors, physician assistants who are trained, and again, this is, you got to really emphasize this. This is basic care. This is for minor conditions. If you've got an emergency situation, yeah, get to an ER. But if you've got this condition that you think you're not really sure about, it's a good idea, you'd like to talk to a doctor today, that's what it's for. In many cases, yeah, you're talking to a doctor or you're talking to a physician assistant. And also, it's not just for these kind of primary care, urgent care visits. Your health systems are using this technology to monitor patients with chronic medical conditions or to do a consultation. For an example, spectrumocyte, if you're in Ludington and you need to see a cardiologist, you want to drive all that way into Grand Rapids for that visit, or can you go to your physician office or sit at your home there and do that consultation with the cardiologist, at least the initial consultation? So there's the convenience for you. And again, all the data showing that telemedicine is rapidly emerging and growing, and about to become pretty commonly used in healthcare in America.
MIBiz senior writer Mark Sanchez, thank you so much.
Talk to you again in 2 weeks.